This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
This is the Escape Hour. It's Saturday afternoon. It's cold in Melbourne today, and we are going to get warm by travelling not to New York or LA or anywhere particularly warm, but we are going to be travelling to Georgia today. Stefan, yes. Welcome Good to afternoon. The show. Thank you for coming in and hanging out
Thank
with
you.
Us.
No.
Today it's just you and me. Is this the first time you and I have just done the show together?
I think it might be, yes.
It's scary, our virgin show.
Yes.
So what's the news about our other co-hosts? They're gallivanting.
I think they're travelling. I think one of them is in Australia, Adelaide, I think.
Delayed.
Which apparently the place to be now.
Oh,
I'm not quite sure. I'd still remain to be convinced.
On, a lot going on in Adelaide.
And Russ is in South Korea.
Now, I think that recently we had someone on to talk about Korea, and he said that in Korea you just call it Korea.
Oh.
You don't call it South Korea. But anyway, just like last week we went to Ukraine and we learned, as Russ pointed out, you don't say the Ukraine because that's not very – Ukrainians are not very happy about that, understandably. So last week we went to Ukraine, which leads us to why we are going to Georgia today, because Georgia is very close. And we want to continue the conversation about that particular part of the world.
Yes, I think it's quite exciting. It's not a very explored part of the world from Australia.
That's for sure.
So I think that's really exciting.
Well, my interest was piqued a number of years ago by a friend of mine who very much said, I really want to go to Georgia and drink wine. And I thought that was just an amazing idea. We still haven't made it yet.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
I'm just going to introduce our fantastic guest who came out of our conversation with Stefan from Little Odessa. It's Aidan Raftery from Venice, who is based in Sydney, I believe.
Wine importers
based in Sydney, but you're based in Melbourne.
Correct.
Now, one of the most exciting things when I looked at the Little Odessa website was this Georgian wine dinner, which sadly had gone past. And I was immediately said to Stefan, I have been wanting to get someone to talk about Georgia for the longest time on the show. And I am so glad that you had jumped at the chance.
I'm thrilled, absolutely.
But obviously you just have recently been to Georgia and you absolutely loved it.
I did, correct, yeah. I went in May and when I came back, I couldn't stop thinking about it for 2 days, so immediately booked flights back and I leave in a month. So
this
certainly gets under your skin.
Perfect time to talk about Georgia. So tell us about, you know, how you ended up on your way to Georgia.
Sure. So, yeah, so I work for a wine importer called Venice, and they are, well, we are the only importer in Australia of traditional Georgian wines, i.e. The Quevri fermented. There are some people who bring in the slightly more industrial, but we only work with the very traditional farmers. So as part of that, we go annually to Georgia, and we try all of the new wines generally out of Quevri. Most of them haven't been bottled yet, and we choose what we're going to bring in for that year. So that was sort of what the trip was about, and sort of I suppose getting a bit more in-depth knowledge of the area rather than just through reading books and this sort of thing, because you get such a different feeling from actually being there than just reading things on paper. Yeah, absolutely.
And now I want our listeners to make sure they stay tuned, because at the end of the show we're going to talk about some really interesting things that are happening politically in the LGBTI community Georgia later on in the program. But maybe if you can give us a little bit of background on Quevri.
Yeah.
And the Georgian methods of making wine.
Sure, yeah. So that'd probably be the thing that most people are sort of think of as a bit strange about it. But it's everything, well, traditionally everything was fermented in what they call a Quevri, which is similar to what the Italians have as an amphora, or the Spanish have as a tinaja. So obviously all the ways they used to make them. They're slightly different in shape. Amphoras tend to be slightly more slender and Quevris are slightly more bulbous, and they're sort of supposed to represent the womb, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so there's a Georgian thought process, quite beautiful, that they think is that the process of production of wine, so from grapes to wine, is the process of birth. So they spend their time for about 9 months within a quevery and always with their mother, which is the full solids, which is why it's sort of quite different to how we make wine now.
And the mother is made up of?
The seeds and the skins and the essentially the lees and everything that comes out through fermentation of the wine.
So those things act like, as in if you're making sourdough or kombucha that use a mother, so the seeds and those components act as like aiding the fermentation?
Yeah, so they aid natural fermentation. They can sort of make it more stable. And so it's just a process they've always done. It obviously changes flavours and aromas and textures and all these sorts of things. So a lot of people who try Georgian traditional quevery wine with skin maceration, so what is known as amber wine or orange wine or any of these sort of hip things you're hearing about, they can be quite confronting, I suppose, because if you had your eyes closed, the white wines kind of drink like red wine. They have as much tannin and structure and presence and power to sort of resemble this.
Now, one thing, Stefan, when I was looking at Aidan's website, the word they used for what the wine was profound.
Yes.
Can you give us a rundown on profound wine? Yeah. I really want to have some profound wine.
Profound wine. The reason I'm in this industry is sometimes you have a wine and you just sit there and this aroma hits you and you sort of get lost in a moment and the world seems to stop around you and these aromatics just hit you and you just could imagine yourself smelling this thing for days and days and days. And that to me is profound, and that's why I'm in this industry, is for those moments. And, you know, it happens a lot in Georgian wine. It did for me anyway.
And then, of course, you use the word umami, the beautiful word, which I guess is the flavour of place. I mean...
Yeah, so you can imagine being fermented in clay, there's a very different flavour profile that can happen in that and a different feeling on the palate. There's sort of almost a chalky sandiness to it. Mm. And then the skins obviously impart flavours. You think like... I suppose a really simple analogy would be like if you think of a rosé where there's not a lot of skin contact from a red wine. Mm. It's quite fruity and fresh and delicious and light and crunchy. And then when you make it into a red wine, so there's extended skin contact, the flavours change. So they're not quite as bright and fruity, they're slightly more savoury. So the same thing if you think about with white wine is that if you ferment it without skins, it's very fresh and fragrant and forward. And then you put all these skins and that's when the umami, these savoury complex characters come through.
Mm. Oh my goodness,
it makes
sounds
it very,
so
very
delicious.
Food friendly. Yeah. And I'm thirsty already.
I know. We have had a lovely Riesling specialist in here. Oh, he's not a specialist, it's his hobby. He travels around the world drinking Riesling. Mm. We had a lovely
hobby.
Riesling day one day, which was fun. Now, but is there, how many varieties of red wine are there? I heard there was
there's 525 indigenous varieties to Georgia.
Wow.
We bring in a wine from a winery called Pheasant's Tears, and they've got a vineyard called Polifonia, which is obviously based on the singing that they do there, which is that sort of harmony, everything's coming together.
It's called Polifonia?
Polifonia is the cuvée, yeah. And so that is 417 Georgian varieties all fermented together in one, little nursery block vineyard, yeah, which is fabulous.
Goodness.
Yes, indeed.
And they have the varieties of red wine the many shades, including one that's black.
Exactly. So you've got Saperavi, which is like a Tenturia grape. So you have red skin, but also red flesh. So traditional red grapes you would have seen, the black skin and white centre. So it's very dark and inky, which is sort of quite famous from Kaheti, so in the eastern part of Georgia. But then when you sort of move to western Georgia, you get these amazing sort of delicate, fragrant, exquisite light reds made from Odjeleshi and Obaluri Odjeleshi and Aladastouri and et cetera, things people won't know. But yeah, it's a fabulous area, the west.
So definitely, I think the word is to go and explore. I mean, Georgia, okay, let's locate it on the map. Russia to the north, mm-hmm. Turkey to the south. I just looked this up, everybody. You can tell. Did my favourite search engine. The Black Sea to the east and...
Black Sea to the west.
Sorry.
Yep, exactly,
and
yep.
Then the Armenia is to the east.
Yeah, and Azerbaijan to the end of that. Yeah.
Incredible.
So it is, yeah.
How did you come across Georgian wine? I'm quite interested to what led you to Georgian wine.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I actually tried it for the first time in a now-defunct restaurant called Virginia Plain, which was on Flinders Lane, just up from Cumulus.
Mm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so
that.
Now it's...
It
yeah,
was
now
there
it's,
for 5 minutes.
Exactly, that's the one, yeah. There was this Fonda Mexican now, but when it was there, a friend of mine in the industry, Raul, a Spanish sommelier, had imported some Pheasant's Tears wines from Georgia specifically for that restaurant. They were sort of fairly cutting edge and they imported them exclusively, and it was the first time I'd ever tried them. And the same thing, I remember trying this white that literally sort of smelt and almost tasted like raw kingfish. It was the strangest thing for me to try in a wine. And so it was sort of this moment, profound moment. That was sort of very, very interesting. So, and then I, through industry buying in restaurants in Melbourne, I've been sort of exposed to them since Venice brought them in. So it's sort of this lovely fit when the position came up to go and work with them firsthand. I jumped at it.
Recently, I was at a little Italian place in Fitzroy, and we drank a Chardonnay that actually sort of smelt and tasted like chicken.
Oh.
Now, yes. I don't eat chicken but myself, but I must admit that when one of the people I was dining with said, it actually smells and tastes like roast chicken, I went, oh, my God, you're so right. It does. It was the freakiest thing.
Yeah, it's strange. That chicken stock is one I always find, like in certain like slightly oxidative examples, you get this chicken stock character, which, again, if you read it on paper, you would think, oh, that sounds horrendous. I've got no interest in trying that. But there's something about it that I think is interesting, yeah.
That was so you were recently there, of course. Now,
yes, indeed.
The one of the exciting things about Georgia is that it was only came out from behind the Iron Curtain in 1991.
Yes.
So it's relatively new to the discovery of travellers.
Very much so.
Tell us a little bit more about, you know, when you went there, what your, like, you know, how long you were there for, and, you know, what that
sure.
was like.
Sure, yeah, so I was there for 2 weeks. 10 days of that was the junket, I suppose, of the buying and the visiting of vineyards and eating and drinking far too much from the moment you wake up until the moment you end up passing out at the end of the night. But then I'd had some time set aside at the end to spend time on my own in Tbilisi and just sort of experience the city. And it was sort of that plus the whole trip that really sort of drummed it in and sort of got under my skin. Like it's an amazing feeling. You hear those quips where they say it's the Paris of Eastern Europe, and you can definitely feel that when you're sort of walking through old town with these exquisite old buildings. And there's kind of this really beautiful sense of decay is probably the best way to describe it. You know, there's lots of buildings that aren't being kept up, so there's sort of cracking and kind of falling apart, but exquisitely beautiful. And the streets are cobblestoned, and every second sort of window is someone selling food or wine, and there's wine bars everywhere, and there's art, there's an amazing art scene there. And it's an incredibly sort of, I suppose, this creative boom that's happening really quickly from coming out from under that Iron Curtain, as you say. So, yeah, there's a real mixture of that. And then there's a lot of sort of architectural, sort of new modern things that have been put in, and sculptural things. And, yeah, it's a very incredible sort of city. It's just, yeah, it's amazing.
Food and wine obsessed, apparently.
Food and wine obsessed.
According to Vogue Online.
Exactly, yeah.
Melburnians will love it there.
They will. Yes, exactly. They should all go. It's a wonderful thing. But there's a saying in Georgia where they say, like, a guest is a gift from God. I think they also have the same expression in Turkey. And you get that. As soon as you arrive in that country, you are just welcomed by everybody. It's remarkable.
Fated, in fact.
Indeed.
Wow, that sounds like a really incredible experience.
Yes.
And I think what's really fascinating is that when a country that hasn't seen any money or development in it until recently, obviously it retains all that beauty and it hasn't been overly modernised at this stage.
Yeah, there's almost like an innocence to it that I found there as well. There's this wonderful sort of innocence and not understanding industrialisation or specific kinds of farming that seem so at norm with us here in Australia. Like a little thing I found fascinating was mushrooms, which are everywhere there in restaurants. So oyster mushrooms. And so I'd always associated that with more Asian cuisine. But all of these restaurants, you sort of ask, you know, where they get them from. And they're like, well, they grow on trees. You know, that's how you get them. They're all just wild. And the idea of cultivating a mushroom, they've never heard of it. It was the most foreign thing they'd ever heard of, that you could actually farm mushrooms. It's, no, you just get them off a tree. That's where they come from. Oh, so there's this wonderful sort of innocent bubble, and that sort of is why the food is just so incredible. I can't even describe it.
Oh, my goodness.
I've missed my favourite show on Joy. What do I do? What do I do?
Podcasters to battle!
Joy podcasters fight on tirelessly to bring you the best bits of every show. So if you've missed something recently on Joy, don't worry. Our podcasters have your back. Head to joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab or look us up on iTunes. Podcasters on Joy 94.9, fighting tirelessly for your listening pleasure.
You're on The Escape Hour with Fiona, Stefan, and our guest today is Aidan Raftery, and we're talking about Georgia.
Tell us a little bit more. There were some things you were talking about in the break. I know we're talking about food, but we're going to segue briefly into 8,000 years of winemaking.
Yeah, so the oldest winemaking country in the world. It's a lot of it's unchanged. So unchanged, sorry. So if you imagine the Soviet, during Soviet times, that sort of 70-year period, why I suppose people associate amber wine so inherently with Georgia is, you know, Stalin, we don't really speak about him, but his one of his favourites was Kahetian wine. So the tradition of Kahetian wine is 6 months of skin contact and stems, like the whole bunches of white grapes, into a quivery. And he liked this style, and so this was kept, and so he allowed that to still be made for him. Mm. And that was a style. And then there was another style called Imereti style, which is towards the western part of Georgia, where it was tradition to have 10 to 15% of your skin contact, but no stems. And again, that was a style that was kept. So then the rest of the country produced European wine, and that's sort of where the industrialization sort of happened, where they would do French oak and stainless steel and this sort of thing. So that's something we don't deal with at all.
So I was going to ask the difference between the more traditional wine or with the contact time. So what the contact time for not a normal wine, but for a French wine, for example, how long?
Yeah, so the skin tradition, so modern tradition. So all, you imagine back in, so when Italian and Greek and everyone was making wine, there wouldn't have been any sort of industrialization in this concept of keeping clean juice for fermentation. Mm. You just would get the bunches and it would ferment. Mm. It's never really changed in Georgia, which is sort of why, as I was saying, it's kind of linked. But the way we sort of have it now, the modernization, is that you press the white grapes and so the white juice comes out and that's fermented. So there's no skin contact at all, never any stems used. But, you know, a lot of people are leading back to this, and so there's people in France and Greece and Italy making wine in this style, and in Australia as well, and sort of being inspired and trying some of these wines and being interested in the different flavors and things that happen with the grape variety you may be familiar with.
So I'm interested in the way that the winemaking permeates every aspect of Georgian life and culture. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned that the Georgian letters are...
Yes, the Georgian sort of alphabet is based on vines, you know, so it's so inherently ingrained in their culture, wine. And so walking through Tbilisi, you'd sort of see apartment buildings that would have trellised grapevines on their balcony that they would be making wine from. In between buildings, there'd be little vineyards popped in. This is in the middle of Tbilisi. Obviously, every church and monastery you see all have vines. I had a tasting in Tbilisi with a winemaker from a region called Racha, which is up in the mountains. And so we met at his apartment in Tbilisi, and in his basement. So instead of car parks, they will have quivries buried in the cement underneath so that they can make wine. And there was, you know, you get down there, it was like a little laboratory of all these water bottles for Bujomi, which is like a very heavily mineral spring water that they have there. And so all of these had different fermenters going on with little bubblers on top, all just sitting in the basement. It was amazing. It's just so a part of it. And it's the sort of the process of bottling wine, so into a glass bottle for selling in retail, is a fairly recent thing for Georgia as well. All you'd do was you would put it into whatever you had lying around, so an old Coke bottle or an old water bottle or milk bottle, and you'd sort of swap with your neighbours and give them a bottle and they'd give you a bottle. And still when you go to the markets, you'll sort of see stalls with people with all their fruit and vegetables they've grown themselves, and then the wine they've made themselves. There's just this sea of plastic bottles that they're selling.
And you don't see public drunkenness or things like
Not public drunkenness. I mean, there's heavy drunkenness. Yeah, absolutely.
Private drunkenness.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very private drunkenness. No, a lot of drunkenness. It's amazing how much they can drink.
And so do you think how much of the wine has influenced the food?
Oh, wholeheartedly. It's interesting. I remember when I was first looking at Georgian wine and tasting it in these sort of formal tasting events, and I sort of think to myself, when would you ever sit and have a bottle of this? It's super interesting and very, very exciting, but, you know, a glass is probably enough. But then when you get to Georgia and it's just like litre carafes of sort of homemade wine that's made this way, it just suits the food and everything makes sense, and that leader can disappear very, very quickly.
So dumplings. You've got dumpling socks on.
I do. Kinkali.
Kinkali socks.
Yeah.
Might have to take a photo and post it on our Facebook page.
Yeah,
dumpling socks. Kinkali.
Yeah, so Kinkali would have been from, obviously, the Mongol influence, because obviously they've been invaded by everybody. Yeah. So it's more of a traditional mountain dish where you have a sort of open fire and a sort of big sort of... like stone cauldron kind of thing, a metal cauldron, and full of boiling water, and you boil the dumplings in there. So if the thing you probably be like a precursor to say like Xiaolong Bao, imagine. Mm-hmm. So it's got filled with meat and it's got soup, but it's really thick sort of pastry casing. So traditionally you just hold the top knot, you bite into it, you suck out the soup, then you eat the dumpling, but you leave the top knot. And you can go to some sort of ex-Soviet bars in Tbilisi and it's just standing room only, no chairs, and you just they just count up your little knots at the end of your meal and charge you for your knots as you go.
Oh, just like when you're in the Basque country and
yes,
they charge
exactly.
you by your
sticks.
By your sticks.
So yeah, that's sort
Fantastic.
Of that's, so you can see the food's sort of really influenced by so many different things because you have that sort of Mongol influence, then sort of down towards the south where there's the Turkish border. You know, there's some of those sort of slightly more Mediterranean, Middle Eastern sort of flavors creep through. But one of the things that I noticed most was how little meat we ate when we were there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, no fish because there's not a lot there. We didn't river trout quite a lot, but the rest would be imported. But again, you know, it's not an affluent country, so people aren't. You know, buying meat unless they're growing it. You know, so we had chicken and suckling pig one night, but they were both grown by the farmers. Mm. But we just ate vegetables, and that's sort of what inspired the vegetarian supra we did at Odessa. Was not because they're a vegetarian nation, but we just ate so much vegetables when we were there, which is a really nice change when you're on a wine junket because that's not common. But just the vegetables are incredible. You know, none of them have been sort of industrialized. So none of the bitterness has been bred out of tomatoes. So an area you wouldn't think, you know, you think tomatoes Mediterranean, but the tomatoes are incredible. The cucumbers have like the most flavor and you could just eat them as they are. Walnuts and yeah, it's an amazing sort of thing.
Do they have any bitter greens?
They don't. They have... what do they have for bitter greens? No, there's wild greens they get, but they're not super. The really interesting is their coriander, because coriander is they're used in everything. But I suppose if I was thinking about it, their coriander is like base and the stuff we see here is all treble. Like the flavour is so different and it's obviously derived from the same plant, but when you see it, it's much more about the stalk. There's not so much leaves, whereas here, you know, it's all about the leaves are quite sort of pretty.
Right, so but it's more wild in that
very much
sense.
So. Yeah,
like,
it is wild.
Like broccoli rabe, for example, which
absolutely.
Is that wild broccoli, which is less head and lots of stalk.
Exactly, so it's all wild,
What was the oddest thing that you ate while you were there?
It was actually the oddest thing and also the most profound. It was the very first meal I had in Tbilisi, and we went to a little local restaurant where everything they grow themselves and it's all organic and like so many things are. But it was this thing called Jonjoli, and it's... basically, this very pretty white flower that only flowers in May, so when we were there, and it's sort of, they look like a weeping willow kind of thing. They're sort of droopy white flowers, and they lacto-ferment them. And so you can just eat them as they are, or they make them into a salad with some spring onion and the coriander and dressed with sunflower oil, which is what they use everywhere there. And it's not like the sunflower oil you get here, that's that hideous, refined, chemically nasty thing. This is incredible flavour. It's just from sunflower seeds. But that was it. It was this Jonjoli, and it was just this moment that was just so incredible. Something of, you know, when you, it's not often you try something that's completely new. You know, you can always say there's similarities in flavour to, say, a caper, but it was completely unique and something I'd never experienced before.
Oh, and the beauty of travel.
Absolutely,
that's what you do it
that's
for.
That's exactly what you do it for. Yeah, indeed.
So you are planning to go back.
I am. 1 month today, I'll land.
And will you be doing, you'll be doing some more wine shopping while you're there?
Yeah, wine shopping and drinking, but it's actually going to be a junket-free. I'm going to visit one... winery, but it's not really a winery. It's a gentleman who only deals with wines that are vines, sorry, that are wild. And so this is a vine that's never been touched by a human hand. As in, so the seeds would have blown and it's sort of pollinated itself. They grow up trees because obviously they're climbing. Right. So he'll go to forests to climb trees to pick these grapes. And some of them are 400 years old, which are obviously the oldest vines in the world. So he only deals in that. So that's the one I'm going to do. The rest of the trip's going to be seeing the country because, as I said, I fell in love with it so much so, and actually experiencing things outside of a drunken and very full stupor for 10 days. So it's going to be wonderful.
What are some of the top stories you're going to visit when
so,
you're there?
Yeah, I'm going to go to up into the mountains. There's lots of skiing up there, but I'm just going to be doing some camping and just sighting and hiking. It's pretty incredible scenery up there, which we didn't get to. So that's in Svaneti and Kazbegi. I'm going to be going to Samogrelo, which is like a little national park, or Martvili National Park, and it's a sort of network of canyons where you can go diving in the water. So I'll be doing that. I'm going to get over to the Black Sea and see their version of like Miami, I suppose, on the beach in Batumi, which will be interesting. Not quite so keen on that, but it's got to be done. And then I'm going to be going down to the south to an area called Vadzia, where there's some incredible cave town, so all carved into a cliff face. So I'm going to be visiting that as well.
That's near the border of Turkey.
Indeed, somewhere down that way, yeah. Oh, I think it's a bit further across.
Sounds like you've got quite a trip quite a trip planned.
Quite a trip, yeah.
Lots of outdoors.
Lots of outdoors this time.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
You're on the Escape Hour with Fiona and Stefan and Aidan Rufftree. We're talking all things Georgia today.
So we did some research, of course, on LGBTI rights.
Well, yeah, so I think it's there's been freedom of same-sexual activity since early 2000 in Georgia, but it's really quite tense still, and there's no recognition of same-sex marriage or unions or civil union. But I think it's a difficult climate from what I was reading, and there's quite a lot of far-right protest against gay rights. I think recently in May last year there was a protest. There was a gay rights support rally that was cancelled because of far right pressure. So it's
there's a lot of bad things happening in places like Russia these days,
and the ex Soviet Union.
I think our guest Aidan was actually a part of that. Tell us about your experience.
So, yeah, I was there on, so it was on my birthday when I was there, so it was May this year. Mm-hmm. And so we decided we were going to go to one of the nightclubs there, which we'd heard about through a friend who'd been to Georgia and said it was a wonderful place called Bassiani. And so we were going to Bassiani, we're at the front, and as we were there, this sort of sea of police buses pulled up, and everyone sort of, you know, flooded out of these buses with full riot gear, you know, helmets and batons and shields, and it sort of looked like some sort of terrorist thing was going on. We had no idea what was going on, and they just flooded the club and pulled everyone out. And so we were sort of asking everyone what was going on, because we'd here cut to go, and they sort of weren't too sure what was going on. Nothing was being said, so they were all being pulled out. So then we had heard about another club called Chidi, which we decided to go and visit there. And when we got there, again, all these kids were out the front, and so we were chatting to. We met a couple of guys there, and they were telling us that it was because of these drug issues that had happened, and so the government was sort of flexing the muscle, I suppose. And so it shut down all the nightclubs in one night, shut everything down through Tbilisi.
So they were just they weren't just gay nightclubs; they were all nightclubs.
All nightclubs, yeah. So Hidi that we went to was a gay nightclub. Well, it was a gay night on that night, but no, it wasn't just that. It was just all nightclubs based purely on these drug deaths that had occurred from bad drugs being sold by a sort of some sort of gang there. So that was what happened on my birthday. And then the following day, we had a wine event on, but as we were walking back from the hotel to look for somewhere for dinner, we heard all this yelling in the streets and lots of young people running around. And so we stopped them and said, what's going on? And they were like, we're going to the streets of to protest. The nightclub's being shut down. We're like, we were there last night. And they're like, you've got to come with us. So we went down to the steps of Parliament, and they were having this huge protest and lots of very sort of passionate speeches. Obviously in Georgia, we weren't too sure what was happening, but we were cheering and yelling and getting behind the whole thing. And then they sort of, all the DJs from all the clubs had set up on the steps of Parliament. So then this huge party happened, and there was a lot of police present.
Very cool.
It was amazing. And the vibe was so positive and really incredible. So, I mean, I've seen lots of the videos of stuff that did happen. But when we were there, which was on the first day of protesting, it was quite peaceful. There was a lot of police presence, but they weren't sort of getting in people's faces. However, day two, we had already left. But we saw all the sort of Facebook videos, and that's when the far right sort of kicked in, and it got pretty ugly. So it was a pretty remarkable time to be there.
So, I mean, when you were in that protest that was out on the steps of Parliament House, it was a real mix of people.
Absolutely. There. Old, young, men, woman, gay, not gay. It was incredible. Yeah, okay. real mix.
And so did you feel like the people there from the gay community were out and proud to the best of their ability?
Nothing like here. No. Nothing like here.
Even restrained.
Even at Hidi, and it was literally a gay night. Mm. You know, there's no holding hands even. I mean, it was definitely, you felt that it was, it's a very obviously religious Orthodox country, so there's still a bit of a fear of that. Even in downtown Tbilisi, you never felt it, you know, like you would here, which is a shame.
So you managed to get into the nightclub before the police?
We literally got it to the first one, and it got shut down as we were there. So. And then every other one, there was like a single raid at the exact same time. So every other one we went to one after, and then they took us to another one. Everyone was already on the street at both of these places, so it was all done.
So I hope that they're up and running so you can go visit them in a month's time.
Yeah, exactly. They are. They were down for about a week or a fortnight or so. So it was actually quite a long time. But they're all back and kicking on again. Yeah. So,
but, you know, I mean, if I mean, you wouldn't tell people not to go because to the country.
No.
I mean, regardless of
that was
things.
The only thing that happened when we were there, and we didn't even experience it firsthand. Every single moment we were there was absolutely peaceful, and there was no issues. And it was just obviously a very niche market that got targeted, which is sad.
Yeah, that's
really sad.
It's troubling times in that particular part of the world.
Very much so.
But no reason to not travel.
I was incredibly safe. I never once even, and that was, you know, people would, when I told people the story, they're like, what, you went to a protest on the streets of Parliament? You know how dangerous in a country you don't know. But I didn't ever feel unsafe. That's why I went. And then when we were there, it never felt unsafe. There was nothing about it was unsafe. It was,
I think that comes down to what we had Chris Doyle on the show a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about this safety barometer. And what do you feel safe? So obviously you probably wouldn't go holding your partner's hand in the street of...
In Tbilisi,
So, but you... There's no reason to not go because, I mean, it is legal. Although there's no pride event, it will open up, and it's just the traditional,
as
you say, the traditional Orthodox thing. But yeah, the safety barometer, as it was calling it, like deciding where you go based on thing and not putting yourself at risk in such a way.
Absolutely. You don't want to go on holidays and put yourself at risk.
No.
What would be the point?
No. So it's doing your research, right? If obviously you know this climate, you're not going to have displayed signs of affections and all those kind of things.
So what do you think the average Tbilisi would do on the weekend? Like, how do they have fun?
Eating and drinking. They really do. Everything starts a lot later, like a good European city, you know, so lunch is at 3 or 4 and dinner's at 11-ish, you know, and so you're out until 3 every morning. Like, I remember the biggest shock to get used to was trying to find a cafe. There was 2 good coffee shops, but they don't open until 10 or 11 in the morning because everyone's sleeping. So, you know, it's a very strange thing for us for the cafes there. But, their weekend would be, most of them, it's very social. Everyone will sort of catch up somewhere at a bar and then go to this bar and then have a bite to eat here and then go somewhere else for another bar and sort of bar hop around. Just sort of no one sort of sets in for the night, but it's very social. You see everyone sort of catching up in large groups. Just eating and drinking. A lot of eating and drinking. Everyone seems to eat and drink out. I don't see so many, like, home cooking, especially in the young, I should say.
I know that there's probably they probably have very extended families, you would imagine, so there was probably lots of family gatherings and all ages, like when you go out there's a lot of many age levels.
Yep, absolutely.
You would say. And then, like, what is the one thing that you're the most looking forward to when you get back, aside from tasting more wine?
Yeah, I can't wait to get off the plane and eat John Jolly again. That's the first
John thing. John Jolly.
Yeah, I brought a jar back with me and it lasted 5 minutes. I mean, it's delicious. But just being there, there's an amazing sort of energy to the country, you know, and I've heard sayings, so it's kind of like leaving Narnia when you leave, and it really is. It's this very strange just place that sucks you in. There's a smell, and you can smell it when you open like a bottle of Georgian wine. You get this aroma and it sort of draws you back to where you were, more so than any other wine I've had from other countries, you know, that takes you there. I suppose probably the closest thing would be something like the Southern Rhone when you smell that Garrigue, so all the wild herbs. That sort of would be the only other closest time. But there's something about the smell of Georgian wine that takes you back there. I'm looking forward to eating and drinking there, but on my own terms, because when we were there for the junket, it was supra after supra after supra. And one of the guys I actually went with, I won't mention his name, but his nickname towards the end, within 10 days, was Quevery, because his stomach swelled and he sort of started to resemble a Quevery. He was very slim when he started, but we were very well looked after the whole time.
That does sound, it really sounds, I don't think I've ever heard anyone describe a country quite in the same way.
It's
a really lovely idea. It sounds, it certainly sounds like a bit of a, kind of like a, I don't want to say a fantasy land, but like a storybook kind of environment that you're stepping into, beautiful architecture and...
Stunning and it's so varied in such small areas. So you can go swimming at the Black Sea, for example, and you'll get a tan and the water's warm enough to swim in. And then you can drive an hour and a half into the mountains and the ski fields are open with fresh powder. You know, it's sort of so bizarre. Short trips can be so varied.
It's quite a small country.
Indeed, yeah. Like I think it's 5.5 hours to get from Tbilisi over, or 5 hours-ish from Tbilisi almost to the eastern part, right to the Black Sea. So it's not long.
And obviously it's quite radically different to Turkey, which it borders.
Yes. I've actually never been to Turkey, so I couldn't speak on that firsthand. But from what I see, yeah, very much so.
And do you get the impression that people are still so happy to, you know, obviously one of the biggest problems we have in the world today from a tourism point of view is the over-tourism, where you have countries which are actually banning tourists for periods of time, or, you know, there's a lot of places that are suffering from
too much
love.
I kind of hope that does happen to Georgia a little bit, because as I sort of mentioned before, you know, with every, you know, the mushrooms coming from being grown wild, the same thing, they're now having to import mushrooms from Turkey because there's not enough, because there's not enough off the trees anymore, and that's because there's so many more tourists coming, and so the food's going up, and so you're kind of hoping this industrialization of food doesn't take, but it probably will have to if the tourism booms the way it is. And it's, I mean, it is great for the country. It's so good to see that, and it's an amazing thing. Like when you're in Tbilisi, I mean, tourism's rampant, but from all walks, it's India and from obviously a lot from Russia and just all over Europe. And it's, yeah, it's really good. But I'm hoping they, it is sort of some capping, so they don't lose this wonderful, you know, thing that they are.
And because Russ, who is our travel agent, normally would ask the travel question, how did you get there? Yeah.
So I flew with Qatar, and it was actually a really easy flight. It was actually a really easy flight. So it sort of left in the evening from Melbourne. So by the time you've had a terrible meal and watched a terrible film, you're tired. And then you go for a sleep and you wake up and then you have breakfast and you've arrived in Doha. And then it's only a four-hour flight from Doha to Tbilisi. Oh, so it's a really short second flight.
Doha. It's 4 hours.
Yes. I mean, you do stop in Azerbaijan, but it's kind of like a taxi. You just sort of ferry some more people on and then you get off again. It's just part of the law. And then when I was there, probably the best thing, if anyone is interested in going, we were with a company called Living Roots, who organise food and wine trips, and that's what they do. I mean, they do all sorts of trips, but they do specialise in food and wine.
So,
and
they're remarkable. They're called Living
Roots. Yeah,
Living Roots. They're based in
Tbilisi, and it's travellivingroots.com, and they organise events, and they've got drivers, and we had just the most amazing people that looked after us and took us everywhere. So they're really, really good. So if anyone's interested in food and wine trips, that's where I would be knocking on their door.
Thanks for the tip, Aidan.
Joy 94.9, Australia's best radio station.
That's right. It's Australia's best radio station, Stefan. I think you agree with me on that, don't you?
I do. Completely.
Well, we are coming to the end of the Escape Hour again. Fascinating trip,
absolutely.
Aidan. We really enjoyed learning all about Georgia. Yeah. For me, it's been mostly about the wine. But, the food sounds fascinating.
The architecture and the way of life, and I think it sounds all fascinating.
The storybook. The whole thing.
The whole thing, yeah.
Now, I believe that you're planning a Georgian food and wine dinner or wine dinner coming up.
We are, yeah. So we're planning to do another supra, which is obviously a feast in Georgian. So the one we did with Little Odessa was a slightly more Melbourneized sort of formal event, but the next one we're planning to do is a full traditional supra, just sea of food, with a chef friend of mine, Renee, and then another very passionate person who visits Georgia yearly. So we're in the process of planning, so we haven't got anything set yet, but it will be at Paradise Alley. We can let you guys know when that happens, and you can let them know.
Let us know. And Paradise Alley is in Collingwood.
It's in Collingwood, yes, it is.
Easy Street.
Yep, absolutely.
I have been there a couple of times. It's a funky little spot. Not little. It's quite spacious.
It's quite large, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Now, we do have a question that we
ask
all of our guests. It's a scientific study that we're conducting.
Yes.
Do you fold or do you roll?
Always roll. I hate the creases.
A definitive roller.
Yes, very definitive.
That's good. That's good. We do get, you know, there's lots of people that sit on the fence. I roll a bit, then I fold a bit, then I stuff a bit. So,
yeah, I think when the clothes become dirty, there's definitely stuffing involved. But the start out is always
from
roll.
The outset. And you roll because you think you get more in.
No,
the creases.
Creases annoy me. Yeah.
Okay.
If you saw my wardrobe, it's, you know, color coordinated and short sleeves and long sleeves and a little bit OCD. Yeah.
We have a neat freak in the room. Well, thanks again, Aidan. It's been really fascinating.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
And we will look forward to next week. I believe we are going to Nepal.
Nepal, lovely.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.